Blog Talk Radio.
Beautiful dancing green woman. Hi, it's Susan Weed. I'm here alone again this week. My wonderful daughter Justine and my granddaughter Monica Jean and, of course, David are off on another little vacation. They've decided to take little vacations this year. And because she runs a bed and breakfast, it works out best for her to take those vacations during the time when we're doing Blog Talk. But I have a whole list of questions, and she has set me up here so that if you call in, I will be able to see your call and hopefully be able to connect with you. So go ahead and call if you want to call, and I'll see if I can get my tech savvy together here in order to answer those of you who are calling in. Meanwhile, of course, we continue to have a large stack of emailed questions that comes to us over the weeks, and I am going to be answering those until there are some callers. So let's start with this question. Dear Ms. Weed, I'm writing you for your recommendation. Herbs my mother may benefit from as she was diagnosed with chronic lymphatic leukemia. Then they quickly changed their mind and said she had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma marginal zone B cell about 13 years ago. She is 72 years old with stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in remission. She works part-time in her church, Seventh-day Adventist, and she is a vegan. No dairy, meat, or sugar. I guess this means sugar. It says surgar, and I had no idea what surgar is. Her strong faith in vegan lifestyle, SEACT supplements, Rituxan, and prednisone. She also makes her own tinctures. She's been able to be active and enjoy life. some months ago, my mother started sounding tired. She finally went to the doctors, and they did lab work and found her white blood cell count was down. She had crashed. She also started having nosebleeds. She doesn't like to tell us that she is not feeling well. I read your article on strengthening the immune system, and my question is, would Poken Usnea benefit my mother? Please advise Carol. Now, I don't screen these questions beforehand. They're just printed out and given to me. So I want you to know that if I did screen questions, I probably would never have read this question at all because, first of all, as those of you who have been listening know, I don't do secondhand consultations. I really want the urgency to come from the person themselves who is experiencing the difficulty. I found that just in terms of the greatest benefit for everyone, for my time and effort, it's far better if I connect directly with the person. So while I really appreciate and love your care for your mom, Carol, I'm not so sure that she would really be open at all to anything that I have to say. And if I was going to say anything to her, I would say that she's making a big mistake to be a vegan and that she does not understand human nutrition at all if she thinks that she can not eat sugar. Maybe she cannot take in sugar. I guess it's possible. I guess if you ate a diet that was only meat, oops, she's a vegan. That means most of what she's eating is fruits, vegetables, and carbohydrates, which are loaded with sugar. I guess that what you meant was refined sugar, but let's face it, sugar is sugar is sugar to the body. Whether you eat a blueberry or a spoon of white sugar, your body is going to get the same sugar from it. And sugar is what runs our bodies. Sugar is the taste of life. When we love someone, we call them sweetie. We call them honey. To give up sugar is to give up on life, and I would never, ever recommend that anyone give up on sugar. But you see, aren't we getting into some deep water here? Because maybe your mother wouldn't say that. Maybe she would say, I don't eat any white sugar, and that would be a totally different thing. And this, again, is one of the reasons I don't like doing secondhand consultations, because you're speaking for someone, and we don't really know if she would say exactly what you're saying. So since she isn't eating meat and she's eating a vegan diet, which, again, those of you who know me know that this is a mistake. It's not just my opinion. It's a mistake. It is a scientific fact that a vegan diet shortens the lifespan and especially lets cancers grow unchecked. The liver is unable to work effectively and efficiently in a diet that contains no animal products. Not only that, the hormones, the immune system, and everything have a very, very difficult time when the diet is so severely limited as it is in a vegan diet. Now, one of the things that you say I am very much for, and that is her face. The fact of the matter is that faith trumps everything. So even though she's taking Essiac, which I think should never be taken by any cancer patient, and especially not anybody with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and even though she's taking supplements, and I would never recommend that any person take supplements of any kind, especially not someone who's dealing with any kind of cancer, and even though she's taking drugs, I'm not so sure that those drugs are good for her, but I like her strong faith. And again, I'm hoping that I'm reading this correctly because it says S-T-R-O-N-G-E. And I am hoping that that's just a typo and that I'm not missing something here. Maybe there's a strong-y. Maybe it has something to do with being a Seventh-day Adventist. I'm not so schooled that I would really know that. So I do apologize if I'm making a mistake here. I do not quite understand why it's a problem that her white blood cell count was down. In fact, I thought that lymphoma means that your white blood cell count is very, very high and that bringing it down would be a good thing. But then again, that's why I'm not a doctor. So your question about Poke, well, you know, I would not give Poke to somebody who's taking drugs. And I wouldn't give Poke to somebody who's taking supplements, and I wouldn't give Poke to someone who's taking Essiac, and I wouldn't give Poke to someone who's a vegan. So I guess that's four no's right there, just in terms of the other things that your mom is doing. Poke is a very strong plant. It's a somewhat dangerous plant, and it doesn't play nice with other things. I like to use it as a simple. Usnea is an antibacterial herb, and it works really, really well to help clear bacterial infections. I don't notice here that your mother is dealing with a bacterial infection, so I don't think that Usnea would be especially effective for her, although it probably wouldn't do any damage. Those of you who know me know what's coming next. I would suggest that your mother drink nourishing herbal infusions, that she drink stinging nettle infusion, that she drink red clover infusion, that she drink oat straw infusion, that she drink linden infusion, and if she's comfortable with it, that she also drink comfrey leaf infusion. In fact, I would say that comfrey leaf infusion might, of all the infusions, be one of the ones that is the absolute best for her. The linden infusion will do what the prednisone is supposed to be doing, and she can probably start decreasing the dose of her prednisone if she does start drinking linden infusion. If you're not quite sure how to make the infusions, please go to YouTube and check it out right there and see how to make infusions. And I hope that this helps you, Carol, and your mom, whose name we don't even get. Gang, if you're going to write me about somebody else and push my limits here, at least tell me what the other person's name is, okay? Thanks. Green blessings to Carol and her mom, who's not nameless. We know she has a name. Okay. Dear Susan Weed, thank you for keeping the sun in Susan. I am 26, and I have recently been diagnosed with premature ovarian failure. Because of this, I suffer from various symptoms such as horrible hot flashes and night sweats, TMJ, terrible back pain, blurred thoughts, low libido, and although my symptoms are sometimes unbearable, I refuse to start any kind of hormone replacement therapy. Over the past few years, I have become incredibly interested in alternative and herbal medicines. I'm actually planning on getting my master's in acupuncture and herbology. I currently work at a restaurant in northern New Jersey and happen to hear your name from one of our customers. It would be an honor if you could answer my question. And Nicole, I want to apologize. Last week I thought that I had gone through all of the questions and brought the very oldest ones to the top, but I didn't. And so here's your question. My goodness, you wrote in almost 2 months ago. Well, I hope that you come back and listen to the recording if you're not listening tonight. And let me support you in your rejection of hormones. I'm sure that lots of doctors are telling you that terrible things can happen to you if you don't take hormones. But let me tell you that my yoga teacher, who is now in her 70s, refused to take hormones after her ovaries were surgically removed in her early 30s. And she has not had a heart attack, and she does not have osteoporosis, and she has not, in fact, had any of the difficulties that the MD said she would have if she refused the hormones. I furthermore know up to about half a dozen other women who've either had their ovaries removed or who, for some reason, their ovaries are not working, who are in their early 30s to very late 20s and who have refused hormones and are healthy, vital, and strong. So you're absolutely right to believe that your body can make this transition. And you know, it's difficult to have menopausal symptoms when you're 26, but in fact, your menopausal symptoms are simply that. They're simply menopausal symptoms. Those horrible hot flashes and night sweats, that back pain, the blurred thoughts, the low libidos. Well, those are the very symptoms of menopause. And for most women, that part of going through menopause only lasts for, oh, really intensely for a year, but if you really count, like, all the time, it could go on maybe 2 years. So I'm hoping, and I bet you are too, that you will move through this pretty well and come to the other side of it. Again, I can tell you that the women that I know who are going, have gone through what you are going through, did come to the other side of it. Those hot flashes, those blurry thoughts, that back pain, that low libido, all of that was only because the ovaries were not supplying one particular hormone. It's just one out of 30 estrogens that the body makes. And once the body gets used to the fact that that one isn't around, it will make plenty of the others. Meanwhile, what can you do? Wait for it. Are you waiting for it? Drink nourishing herbal infusions, of course. You don't mention that you're drinking nourishing herbal infusions in your note to me, although you say that you are incredibly interested in alternative medicine and herbal medicine. So drinking your nourishing herbal infusions is a great place to start. Starting them at 26 is just going to ensure that you are going to make the healthiest, strongest, most beautiful body possible, even though your ovaries have decided to say goodbye. We are not going to do the making of the hormone that we're supposed to make between puberty and menopause. So here's your menopause right now. Now, you know, interestingly enough, women start making 29 kinds of estrogen when they are still in their mother's womb. That's right. When we are in utero, oh gosh, and it's about midpoint in gestation, we actually start making 29 kinds of estrogen. And we're making those 29 kinds of estrogen when we're born, and we make them every day of our lives right up to the very day we die. So there's never any day that any woman can be said to be estrogen lacking or that she needs a replacement for her estrogen. And in fact, that replacement is only a replacement for estradiol, which is the 30th estrogen. And that estrogen starts being made at puberty and stops being made at menopause. So if we really look at it, it is the lesser amount of a woman's life when she is making estradiol, even though scientific medicine tends to think of the fertile woman, the woman between puberty and menopause, as somehow being like the standard woman or the healthy woman or the right woman. If we really sat down and added it up, we would see that before puberty and after menopause is the greater part of our lives. So we're going to trust those 29 other estrogens that you are making to be there for you, to keep your bones strong, to keep your heart healthy, and we're going to trust you to eat a good, broad diet. I'm glad to hear that you're working for a restaurant that gets you exposed to lots of good foods. I think that the healthiest human beings are those who eat the widest variety of foods. And I find that there are great health problems that occur when people limit their diets. A flexitarian diet, which is a mostly vegetarian diet with fish on a regular basis and meat on an erratic basis, is the kind of diet that I prefer. I'm looking at my dinner plate right now, and there's a piece of salmon on it. There's brown rice on it. There's cooked fennel on it. There's cooked beets on it. There's cooked carrots on it. And there's cooked garlic tops on it. So I actually have five vegetables on my plate. It's a full half-cup serving of each one of those vegetables. So it's actually a pretty typical Tuesday evening meal for me. So keep eating widely, keep eating broadly, keep as many possible things as you can in your diet. A further restriction for vegetarianism is people who go for a vegan diet and totally eliminate animal products. I have not seen this diet capable of producing a really healthy person in the long run. Over the short run, 10, 15, even 20 years, we get something that looks like a pretty healthy person, but eventually that does break down because we're not getting critical nutrients that we must receive as gifts from animals. Heme, H-E-M-E, a component of red blood, and vitamin B12, which we can not really utilize as well from a supplement. And when vegans say to me, oh, well, I take a supplement of vitamin B12, I say, well, doesn't that tell you right off that there's something wrong with your diet, that you have to take a supplement for a critical nutrient that is necessary for human life? And then, of course, even more limited is the raw food diet, which is usually a vegan diet as well and consists of foods from which we can get little or no nourishment. So in your situation, you want to be sure to really nourish yourself very, very well. Drink your nourishing herbal infusions, even as little as 4 quarts a week of stinging nettle infusion, oat straw infusion, red clover infusion, linden infusion, comfrey infusion will go a long way to helping to ease the intensity of those hot flashes, get you more sleep at night, deal with your back pain, sharpen up your thoughts, and return your libido from wherever it is. I hear that you intend to get your master's in acupuncture and herbology. And on one hand, I think that that's a great idea. But on another hand, let me ask you this. Is what you want to do is sit inside for most of the hours of most of your days, listening to people tell you about their problems? I urge people who, like you, seem to be outgoing to think more of becoming a teacher. Herbal medicine is people's medicine. And what that means is we need hundreds of thousands of teachers of herbal medicine. You don't need to get a master's degree. You don't need to put yourself into debt. You can actually start with what you already know. Start an herb group. Invite some friends. Meet on a regular basis. Once a month, twice a month, once a week. And start really moving herbs into your life. Just at the very beginning of that, you could generally save between $100 and $250 a month by not buying supplements and using nourishing herbal infusions instead. So you will find that focusing in on herbs for yourself will save you a lot of money, and sharing that with other people will actually make you a lot of money. And you don't have to listen to problems all day long or sit inside. You get to be outside with the plants and talking to people. And as I said, you don't have to put yourself into debt. There are a very, very, very few places where you could get a master's degree in herbology. As a matter of fact, I know of only one. And in fact, I do discourage students who say to me, well, I want to get a certificate in herbology. I say, you know what? The difficulty with there is, and I know because I have trained a lot of people who have gotten various degrees or various certificates, is that we have to empty your mind and we have to start all over again because you have been taught to view herbs as drugs with green coats on rather than to actually have a relationship with the plants themselves. And to me, that's what herbal medicine is really about. It's not about learning the active ingredients and what the exact dosage is and what kind of disease we would use this kind of herb for. It's not about trying to force plants to be soft drugs. It's about letting the plants be what the plants can really be. I'm reading a very interesting article right now, which is questioning double-blind scientific studies. And it's saying that although double-blind scientific studies are the gold standard, we have to understand that every individual person is unique. Oh, my goodness, that's something the wise woman tradition says. And that every individual disease is unique, too. Oh, my goodness, that's another thing the wise woman tradition says. The wise woman tradition says you can't say this drug or this treatment or this herb treats this problem because the problems are unique and the people are unique. But if you go to get a master's degree in herbology, that is what you're going to be taught because to get a degree, you have to take a test. And in order to take a test, you have to learn information which can be tested. And the real difficulty arises when you try to use that information out in the real world and discover that all people are individuals and it doesn't really work that way. So, Nicole, I hope that this has been of some help to you, both in terms of what's going on for you and, of course, get my book, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way. Read it all and do everything in there. Lots more suggestions there. And I hope it's made you think a little bit more about how you can bring your vitality, your joy, and your wisdom to others. Help me make herbal medicine people's medicine. Green blessings. Okay, let's see. I think I have comfrey infusion tonight. Hello there. Susan, oh dear. You know, often when people really write me letters and they misspell my name, I just wad up their letter and throw it away. It really does upset me. Keep the sun in Susan, gang. Susan, I stumbled across your page, Wise Woman in Herbs. I'm suffering with anxiety and insomnia. I just got a glass Midworth Jet Valerian Scope Cap. I'm actually reading what's here. This is what I get. My goodness. Please have some more respect for me. I really function with respect, and I really would like to have respect. And so I'm going to ask you all, if you're going to be sending in questions, I want you to look it over before you push send. And I don't want all of these typos, because I'm not going to read this one. I'm going to put it at the bottom of the stack, and maybe someday, months and months from now, I might get back to that question. But I don't want to have to make my way through all of that. Dear Susan, I am a woman in my mid-20s who is looking for support regarding my digestion. I recently did a test to determine how well I did digest fat in my food. For 1 week, I was required to eat 100 grams of fat per day and collect samples of my bowel movements. During the test, I ate plenty of nuts, coconut oil, butter, and high-fat foods. When the test results came back, I was told that much of the fat I eat is, in fact, ending up in my stool, not in my tissues where it should be. Well, I have had digestive problems all my life, including poor growth and inadequate weight gain in infancy and childhood, and I struggle to maintain a healthy weight despite eating a varied and healthy diet. When I was in my teens, I was diagnosed with osteoporosis in one of my hips, a scary prospect for such a young person. I guess I'm about 10 pounds underweight. I often feel tired, lightheaded, and have thin, dry skin and hair. I am not a vegetarian, and I do not smoke or drink. For a while, I saw an acupuncturist who always had to treat my liver gallbladder meridians. While preparing the needles, she would sing the song, "Liver, liver, 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 liver." Indeed, my blood work has shown that I produce too much bile, a condition called Gilbert syndrome. My primary focus at this point is to regain my health, gain some weight, and feel better. What would you recommend to support full digestion of fats? I feel intuitively that I want to support my liver and gallbladder, but I just don't know where to start. Thank you, Amy. Well, I have to admit, Amy, that was really a curveball there, because bile, of course, emulsifies fats. And when we have a lot of fat left in the stool, it is almost always an indication that we are not producing enough bile. And that's why the fats have not been emulsified. So it kind of goes completely past my understanding of what could be going on, that you were telling me you are producing too much bile. So I don't know of any herbs specifically that calm down the bile. But let's think about two herbs that are really excellent for the liver and the gallbladder. I call them the cool liver herb and the hot liver herb. And that's chicory, Chicorium intibus, and dandelion, Taraxacum officinale. Dandelion is a plant that we are all very familiar with, and those bright yellow flowers, that sunny yellow flowers, and the way that dandelion grows in lawns and every place where it is sunny, sunny, sunny. So when I say to people that dandelion brings a lot of heat to the liver, people just kind of instinctively get this and understand what's going on and how dandelion is a plant that has a lot of heat in it. Chicory is also a roadside weed, and it's blooming right now. If you're driving anywhere in the eastern part of the United States and in many other parts of the continental United States as well, you're going to be seeing chicory by the roadsides. Well, maybe you won't see it because chicory flowers are so beautiful. They're this kind of shimmery blue, some people would say purpley, close up in the sunlight. So you only see the blooms when it's a rainy day or a really cloudy day or early in the morning or late in the evening. Now, what a contrast between one plant that's bright and sunny and grows out in the sun and another one that shuts its flowers when the sun shines on it. And yet, sister plants, both in the Asteraceae family, both plants that have reputations going back thousands and thousands of years, right back to ancient Egypt. Some of the oldest papyrus scrolls that we have, medical scrolls that we have, talk about using chicory. And everywhere that dandelion is common, people have been using and talking about using dandelion too. Now let's ask ourselves, what would we want to use dandelion for? Well, we usually use dandelion when we want to warm things up, when we want to get things going, when we want things to function better and faster and hotter. So we would use chicory then in just the opposite way. We would use chicory if we want to slow things down and cool them off. And let's think about what you've said in your letter. And it sounds to me like the things you've said, and of course I would be loved to talking to you so that I could ask a few more questions, but it sounds to me like the things you said would indicate heat in your body, having a hard time gaining weight, usually because we're hot. People who are cold generally gain weight very easily. You're telling me you're making too much bile. That would be an overactive liver. We certainly wouldn't want to give the heat of dandelion to that liver or gallbladder. We want to give the cool of chicory to that liver and gallbladder. Chicory can be bought as a tincture of the root. You can find chicory root and harvest it and make your own tincture. Or if you're feeling that the root might be too strong for you, and I could ask you some questions, but we're not talking, that would help us decide that, then you might want to make a tincture of chicory flowers. It's a lot harder to make a tincture of chicory flowers because they're not open very often. You have to get up really early to do it. And because it takes a lot of flowers to make even a little bit of tincture. So certainly no blame, no problem at all if you want to go out and buy a chicory root tincture. And I would say start off with 5 drops and take that 5 drops just before you eat and see if that helps you feel better. If not, then the very next day start taking 10 drops before each meal that you eat. And if you don't feel better, then the next day take 15 drops before each meal you eat and continue up until you're taking as much as 50 drops before your meals. I think that you'll find chicory root tincture a real ally for you in fulfilling your goals to regain your health, gain some weight, and feel a lot better. And, of course, what I would also like you to do is to drink nourishing herbal infusions. Stinging nettle infusion, red clover infusion, oat straw infusion, comfrey leaf infusion, and linden flower infusion are then 5 infusions that I rotate through. All of them are wonderful. I don't take them for any other reason than to be healthy and to regain health. Yes, there are certain specific things that each one of them do. And some people might say to you, oh, well, don't use comfrey because comfrey is supposed to have bad effects on the liver. But the truth of the matter is that no one has ever seen the supposed bad effects that comfrey has on the liver. And I tend to think of comfrey as one of the herbs that would be the most beneficial for you. But we're not talking, so I can't answer any questions that you have about comfrey. You'll need to check out some of my written material, and I do talk quite a bit about comfrey in my latest book down there, Pelvic Health Handbook for Everyone, The Wise Woman Way, as well as in my other books, and of course on YouTube videos. Well, I hope that this has been some help for you, Amy. And I have a whole lot of questions about the diagnosis and how that diagnosis was done, but I can't ask you those questions. So I think this is a good start for you. And let us know what's going on and how it works. Thanks a lot. Green blessings. All right. Here's our next question. Hi, Susan. Keep the sun in Susan, everybody. I was reading on your website about Chaste Berry. I have a menopausal support formula with that and some other herbs. So I was wondering if you had any knowledge or if you could help me with the question concerning black cohosh root extract. Do you know, will it affect me negatively since I have a history of clinical depression and bipolar type 2? I read that black cohosh affects serotonin. I have to be careful. If you could please let me know, if you can help me, I would greatly appreciate learning this from an expert in a field I love, but am a anxious beginner. Okay, anxious beginner Lisa, let's begin here. Give your menopause support formula to someone else. Do not use it at all. I don't like formulas. I don't like them for a lot of reasons, and certainly one of the primary reasons is what you just brought up here. Ooh, is black cohosh safe for you? Well, we don't need to give you black cohosh if you have a sense that it isn't. People are individual, problems are individual, and herbs are individual too. Chaste berry tincture? Are you taking chaste berry tincture because you want to get pregnant and want to have a late life child? I wouldn't necessarily give chaste berry tincture to someone who's going through menopause. Let's reel back even further. You don't need a menopause support formula any more than you need a puberty support formula. Menopause is a natural and normal change. Also, it can be painful, disturbing, upsetting, sleepless, and a whole bunch of other adjectives that I could use there. Nonetheless, we don't need to treat menopause as though it were a disease, even if we are using herbs to treat it as though it were a disease. So get rid of that formula altogether and start drinking your nourishing herbal infusions. Your nourishing herbal infusions will not upset your serotonin levels. They will help you to learn how to change your serotonin level at will. Nettle infusion, red clover infusion, oat straw infusion, linden infusion, comfrey leaf infusion. These are the five infusions that I rotate through. Even as little as 4 quarts of nourishing herbal infusion per week can have a tremendous effect on you. Let's look at what some of these infusions can do in terms of menopause. For instance, since you're looking for support in menopause, and I'm looking in my book, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way. And I want to find red clover. Red clover contains more active phytoestrogens in greater quantities than soy. Strong infusions of the blossom are thoroughly safe to use and highly effective. Use red clover during your menopausal years to keep yourself hormonally fit, to moderate the intensity of your hot flashes, to prevent and reverse breast cancer, to improve your memory, clear your confusion, increase your energy, ease your anxiety, relieve muscle and joint pain, diminish headaches, keep your skin supple and healthy, increase vaginal lubrication, ease incontinence, relieve cystitis, prevent osteoporosis, and prevent strokes as well. Wow, we don't need to have a menopausal support formula when we have red clover on our side, huh? Woo-hoo. One of the reasons why I'm sure to drink at least a quart of red clover every single week. Oat straw. Oat straw, yes, it's the grass of the very same oats that you eat for breakfast. It's best known as a cholesterol-lowering food, but it's a special ally for women who fly off the handle pretty easily and women who want to be sexy old ladies and women who treasure their bones. If you drink Oatstraw Infusion, it will build strong, pliable, flexible bones, maintain firm and reliable teeth, stabilize your blood sugar levels, relieve depression, and ease emotional uproar. This one sounds like it's really important for you. Reduce your cholesterol, reduce your risk of heart disease, improve your circulation, nourish strong nerves, help you engage high energy currents, reduce the frequency and duration of headaches, maintain restful sleep patterns, ease bladder spasms, incontinence, uterine pain, and vaginal dryness. Okay, Oatstraw Infusion, you are a great and wonderful herb for helping all women, but especially menopausal women. Stinging nettle is so nourishing that I talk about it at great length in my book, Healing Wise. But from New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, Alternative Approaches for Women 30 to 90, it says, if you drink stinging nettle infusion, it will nourish, strengthen, and rebuild your kidneys and adrenals, ease and eliminate cystitis, bloat, and incontinence, rehydrate dry vaginal tissues, nourish and energize the endocrine glands, nourish and rejuvenate the cardiovascular system, normalize weight, ease and prevent sore joints, relieve constipation, reduce hemorrhoids, nourish supple skin and healthy hair, create strong, flexible bones, stabilize blood sugar, reduce fatigue and exhaustion, improve stamina, reduce and eliminate headaches, nourish and support the immune system, prevent cancer, nourish and heal the digestive system, and nourish and strengthen the nervous system. Do you see why I am so fired up and excited and thrilled about turning people on to drinking nourishing herbal infusions? If you want to know more about black cohosh and more about chasteberry and why I wouldn't recommend that you take these herbs right now, please do go to wisewomanbookshop.com and get a copy of New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way. Green blessings, Lisa, and may your journey through menopause bring you out the other side, a hale-hearted, strong-boned, and outrageously juicy old lady. All right, nobody's calling in. I don't know if that's because I'm supposed to click something and you can't hear me. It does it say up here, waiting for host, and I'm not sure if there's some other thing that I'm supposed to have clicked. So I'm going to tootle around over here, and I'm going to click this thing here, call in using your computer. No, I don't want that. Call in using Skype. Email for help, promote, episode, send, audio clips, switchboard, no callers. Well, you know, I don't see anything here. Search callers, search audio, upload audio, audio clips. Well, golly gee gang, you know, if in fact you're not being able to hear me, you know, I got to apologize. I thought that I, you know, got everything that I was supposed to do. Let me go back over my notes here. BlogTalkRadio.com, Wise Woman, click on the wee blue arrow, studio on the left of the callers, and there should be a question mark. I don't see anything on my notes here from my training that I was supposed to click anything, but it does say waiting for host, and I don't know what that means, but I'm guessing, because nobody has called in, that the show is being recorded, and you'll be able to drop by and listen to the recordings, but that for some reason I'm not actually on the air, and I just don't want to push the wrong thing, you know? Blog Talk Radio, and what's this thing here? Next, previous. Help, email for help, support forums, studio, that's where we are. Okay, let's go on to the next question, and that next question is from Megan. Hey, I heard about you from a friend. I currently have osteoarthritis, and my hips are bone on bone, and they tell me I need a hip replacement, but I don't want to. I'm looking into prolotherapy. Have you heard of that? Do you have any other ideas that could help me? My back and knees are also a problem. Thank you for your time. And this is quite a difficult question to answer without being able to talk to you. Osteoarthritis is considered a degenerative disease. Basically, what it means is that the fluids in the joints, the synovial fluids, dry out, and exactly as you say, there is bone on bone. That bone on bone causes pain because it's not supposed to be that way. And it also causes quite the reaction in the immune system, making tissues inflame throughout the body, but of course making tissues inflame right at that place. So it may surprise you to learn that I am very much in favor of joint replacements in these situations, where we get to a situation where there is bone on bone. I do not know of any reliable way, any reliable herb, any reliable supplement, any reliable treatment of any kind that can bring back the fluidity that those joints need. Now, you can certainly make and eat bone broth soup. And the recipe for bone broth soup is at my website and or in, I believe it's in the breast cancer question mark, breast health exclamation point book. But let me check here and see if that recipe is also in menopausal years, because it's a wonderful, wonderful soup. Bone density, health loss, mass, pause, skin. No, it's not in the menopause book. Bone broth, and you make that with joints, literally joints of meat, and that's the joint that has that fluid, and you eat that bone broth, and it can be used to help bring back fluid motion to the joints. Again, a couple of lines here. I can't ask you about your diet. I can't ask you what you're eating. You know I'm going to tell you to drink nourishing herbal infusions, but you may not know that I'm going to tell you that comfrey leaf infusion is one that you should, if you feel safe and comfortable with it, really focus in on, because comfrey makes us more flexible. It makes the skin more flexible. It makes the tendons more flexible. It makes the ligaments more flexible. It makes the bones and the joints more flexible as well. And when we have osteoarthritis, that inflammation cycle tends to make things stiff. So they're stiff because there's inflammation, then there's more inflammation because it's stiff. And it gets to be very self-creating. Comfrey comes in there and really changes that, really changes how that goes on. So all of the nourishing herbal infusions, you've been hearing me talk about them if you've listened to any of the other answers, and they are all good for the bones and the joints, but comfrey and linden will be your special allies whether or not you decide to get a replacement. I have a friend who lives in Scotland. She has gotten both of her hips replaced. She has had both of her shoulders replaced, and she is looking longingly toward the day when she can get both of her knees replaced as well. She, too, has osteoarthritis, and she says that she has never been happier or more comfortable in her body since she got her replacements. I was just reading today that there is a new technique for doing hip replacements in which, I can hardly believe it, they don't have to cut through any muscles. And they say that the person is up and walking, albeit with a cane, but up and walking in 3 days out of the hospital and back to work, because the surgery now for hip replacement has become so minimal. My goddess teacher, Zsuzsanna Budapest, has had both of her hips replaced, and she was in the hospital and rehabilitating for an extremely long time after she got her hips replaced. She did have them done in Hungary, so they probably did not use this very, very new technique. And as a matter of fact, I could be wrong, but I think that she had some problem with one of them when she got back to the States, and that she did have to have some remedial surgery done on that. My brother has a knee replacement. He's a very active farmer. He had his knee replaced about 2 years ago, and he is one happy man. He said that the knee caused him so much pain that he was getting sleepless, and because he was getting sleepless, his immune system wasn't working well, and he was getting a lot of colds and flus and problems. And since he's had his knee replaced, he says that it was like taking a shot of the best stuff in the world. His whole health came up. I understand. It's really scary to think about joint replacements. And that's why I tell you these stories of all these people that I know personally who have had hips, knees, shoulders replaced and are very happy that they did so. In fact, I have not met anyone who has had a joint replaced that said to me, I wish I hadn't done it. Whether you decide to do it or not, work with your nourishing herbal infusions. Go to my YouTubes. Learn how to make them. Learn more about them. Make linden and comfrey your ally. Green blessings, Megan. I hope that this helps you. Okay, back, forward, reload, save, print, view, inspect. Call into the show, but I don't want to call into the show. Why don't you hear me? I don't understand. Well, I pressed one again. I don't think that's really going to do anything. That's what the host is supposed to do, is press one. So, add an audio clip. We don't want to add an audio clip. Send. I don't want to go to Facebook. Host call in, yeah, that's the number I called. Host pin, yeah, that's the pin number I put in there. And what's this little thing? It says I. There's a little I for information there. Am I supposed to click that little thing? Host info. Okay. Well, I guess we're okay here. I don't really know if you're getting to hear me live or not. But hopefully we are recording. Let's go on. We're almost come to the end of our first hour. Let me get a sip of my infusion here, and we'll look at Faith's question. When I get to drink my infusion while Justina's talking, when she's with me, you just have to listen to me drink when I'm just by myself. Okay, dear Sue's son, my cat had a sliver or other foreign material in her right middle front toe. I took her to my regular vet. The vet squeezed out the foreign matter and some pus. Then the vet gave her an antibiotic shot. She had a follow-up appointment a week later, and it hadn't improved. The vet prescribed 10 days of Xenoquin tablets and Vetiricin VF rubbed into the wound. We finished that round of antibiotics, but the toe still has not improved. The vet sent a culture to the lab, and the result came back as actinomycosis bacterial infection. She wants me to put my cat on a different antibiotic, which has to be taken twice a day, and if this doesn't work, to amputate that toe. Could you please recommend an alternative that may help? Any advice would be greatly appreciated. Well, this question did come in a couple of weeks ago, and I hope that you have not had to have your cat's toe amputated at this point. One of the very first things that we do anytime there is a wound or an infection is a wound is we want to soak that wound. Now, I know this sounds just crazy, doesn't it? What? You're going to get that cat to soak her paw? Well, sure you are, because that cat likes to lay in your lap and be petted, and you're going to have a teacup there of anything. If all you can get your cat to soak her paw in is water, that will work. I have a nurse friend, and she absolutely says that the best soak is Ivory dishwashing liquid in some warm water. I run around barefoot a lot, and I get all kinds of slivers and stuff in my feet. And I will tell you that my nurse's recommendation to soak my feet in some warm water with a little bit of Ivory dishwashing liquid has gotten the most gnarly things out of the bottoms of my feet, and pretty fast, too. So the cat's in your lap, and you have a cup or a glass, because you don't want to spill it, And you just let her dangle her paw down in there. Yes, of course, you're going to hold her paw down in there. And if she complains, whisper sweet nothings to her. You could also use something like comfrey leaf infusion. Or if you truly can't get her to soak her paw in something liquid, then we could use a poultice. So we could make that comfrey leaf infusion. Then we could take the wet comfrey leaf out of it, squeeze it a little bit, and put it on the cat's paw and wrap that up while she's in your lap and being petted and cosseted and told what a wonderful, wonderful kitty she is. My sweetheart's mom had a terrible ulcer on her leg in her 90s. And nothing that the doctors gave her seemed to make that ulcer heal. None of the antibiotics, none of the creams, none of the steroids. And I was able to get someone from a yoga ashram that I know of in the city to do some seva, to do some service, to go and pick some comfrey, because I know where it grows in Manhattan. If it has been planted, it's not wild. And to go and put comfrey leaf poultices on her leg, on her ulcer. And we were able to completely heal that ulcer. Once again, amputation was being discussed. And wounds that are slow to heal, comfrey can be a tremendous ally. A plant that I really like for drawing out infection from wounds is plantain. And plantain, it's not the banana, it's the broadleaf plant that grows everywhere we walk. It's in parks. It's along the sides of biking paths and footpaths. It's in lawns. And plantain leaf poultice, you can pick the plantain leaf and chop it up and heat it up a little bit and then apply it, or you can chew it up. It's really the very, very best way to chew it up. And again, just hold on to your cat's paw with the plantain where it needs to be and pet her and tell her what a wonderful kitty cat she is while she's in your lap being held by this. I once got a thing in my foot that I couldn't get out, and soaking it in hot water just wasn't doing it. Yes, it was hot water with herbs. I soaked it in hot water with salt. I soaked it in hot water with seaweed. I soaked it in hot water with various herbs that I won't go into in detail. The only thing I didn't try, because I hadn't met my nurse friend at that point, was the ivory dishwashing liquid. But believe me, I tried just about everything else, and nothing seemed to work. So then I started doing direct poultices, what we're talking about here, that you could use for your cat. And I tell you, the one that really did it, the one that went to work and wailed, was patty pan squash, sometimes called flying saucer squash, but almost as good as that was zucchini. It's summer squash time right now. Get out there, get some summer squash, grate it up fine, and put it on that cat's paw. Whenever the cat is sitting in your lap, just hold a handful of it right around the paw. You will be surprised at how quickly this works. Now, I find that the herbal things that we use against infection work very well indeed, even when antibiotics don't. And I learned something else about this from David Winston, which is that if we use herbs that contain berberine, like Berberis vulgaris, which is also called barberry, or Oregon grape root, or coptis, also called gold thread, or even golden seal, that if we use a berberine-containing herb at the same time we are using antibiotic, that in his experience, it gets rid of antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And it sounds like that your vet is concerned that this might be some antibiotic-resistant bacteria. It's certainly looking that way to me from what you write. So if there's going to be another round of antibiotics, you might want to consider getting a berberine-containing herb. And again, those are coptis, also known as yellow thread, berberis, barberry. Your yellow dock has a small amount of berberine in it, but it's not a superb herb to use for this. Oregon grape root is another really excellent one, and to give that to your cat. Now, cats do not take tinctures well, As a matter of fact, they can foam at the mouth. So what we need to do to give a cat a tincture is put the dosage amount, and it's usually 2 or 3 drops for a cat, in some milk or some other liquid that the cat very, very much likes, and see if the cat will take it that way. Never, ever put a tincture directly into a cat's mouth. You could also try anti-infective herbs for your cat, such as echinacea or usnea, or even if your cat is really upset about taking tinctures, you could try 1 drop of poke root tincture made only from the fresh poke root in any wet food that your cat eats. Oh, Faith, I wish I knew the name of your kitty cat. Friends, when you write to me, tell me the names of things. It really helps a lot. And I hope that this is of some help to you and your kitty cat, and that things are going well for you all. Okay. First guest call in. I'm still clicking things here to see why they're not recognizing that the host is here. I'm suspecting that there probably is something that I'm supposed to have clicked that wasn't in my notes and that I don't really know how to do that. Okay, next question. Let's see what we have here. I was wondering, can you give me some information about my condition? I was considering taking chickweed for my polycystic ovarian syndrome. I also have quite a few ganglion fatty cysts. And in addition, I'm overweight and I've had sinus problems for years. Do you think that chickweed would be good for me? Laura, chickweed could be good for you, but I am going to urge you very, very much to consider some other things besides chickweed. First of all, I'd like to see you drinking nourishing herbal infusions, and I don't know if you are indeed drinking nourishing herbal infusions, and I think that they would be tremendously helpful for the difficulties that you tell me that you are experiencing, whether that is a nettle infusion or oat straw infusion, red clover infusion, linden infusion, or comfrey infusion. I think that you would have a really nice relationship with these plants. The sinus problems probably won't be affected by the chickweed. I could be wrong. It might be that the chickweed will affect your sinus problems, but what most herbalists think is the best herb for helping to relieve sinus problems is horseradish. And I am a big horseradish fan myself. So you can get a horseradish root and grate it up and use it as a condiment and things. You can buy already prepared horseradish. Or you can use wasabi, which is actually a kind of horseradish. And daily use, sometimes even more than once a day, seems to be the thing that does the trick. HI-244. I'm looking in my green book here to see if I have anything about sinus infections. And just as I thought, violet would be an herb that could help people who have sinus infections. Again, I'm not saying chickweed would do nothing. I'm just saying it's not what most herbalists or most people are going to think of in terms of relieving sinus problems. Now, let's see. What was the other thing you said? Overweight. I wish that we were on the telephone talking, because I don't recognize any such word in relationship to people. I do not think that there is necessarily an overweight, although I can be concerned about an underweight when people get very skeletal looking. There definitely is a problem going on. However, this whole thing about overweight, well, it's very overrated. in our culture. And we do not really have any good hard scientific evidence that being overweight leads to any particular problems. It is true that if you have diabetes, you are more likely to be overweight, but it could be that it's the diabetes that causes that, not the overweight actually causing the diabetes. And we certainly see when people have stomach banding surgery, even if they are still the weight that they were just before the surgery, their diabetes tends to go away far before the weight goes away, even though certainly people with stomach banding generally do lose the weight. Their diabetes seems to be cured by the stomach banding far before they actually lose any weight. So we're not so sure that any of these diseases are actually caused by overweight, or that they might not just be cofactors, things that tend to come together. I always say that the vowel between the F and the T is what's important. And the vowel that we want between the F and the T is I, not A. So what I'd like you to focus on is not how fat you are, but how fit you are. And if you are overweight to the point where you are unfit, then being unfit is the problem, not being overweight. If you want to join a gym, I've got nothing against it, but most people join a gym so they never have to go. If you are going to join a gym, get a partner so that you can make dates and go. But walking is wonderful exercise and doesn't require any special equipment, any special memberships, or any further money. My book, Down There, has a really excellent chapter on polycystic ovarian syndrome. I know that you're thinking that chickweed tincture will dissolve those cysts. And it is true that chickweed tincture can dissolve ovarian cysts. But here's the odd thing. Polycystic ovarian syndrome doesn't necessarily mean that you have cysts in your ovaries. It's a hormonal syndrome. And it was called that because it was first noticed in women who did have a lot of cysts. But in fact, it's not the major symptom of that. And so once again, chickweed might be useful, but it might not be useful at all. One of the things that I have found, in addition to drinking your nourishing herbal infusions, that's helpful for just about every woman with polycystic ovarian syndrome, is to eat more animal fat. And I usually suggest animal fat at every meal. That could be butter, eggs, fish, full-fat milk, full-fat yogurt, full-fat cheese, or even meat. I was just at the International Herb Symposium, and I went to a workshop on heart health for men. And the presenter was showing us some late and interesting evidence that bacon fat is, in fact, one of the healthiest fats for the heart. Now, obviously, we don't want to be overdoing any of this, but for women with PCOS, animal fat on a regular basis and three times a day is not too much, is one of the best things that I can suggest for you, Laura. Hey, chickweed is good for all of us, and you can make chickweed infusion, and that might even be the better way to work with your chickweed rather than chickweed tincture. Green blessings. Okay. Dear Ms. Weed, I fist learn you through PDF sent from Weston A. Price Foundation with regard to radiation. I left a message on your phone, but it is preferable to contact me through my email. To make a rather long story short, I am suffering from EMF, sensitivity related to exposure to environmental radiation. This has put a strain on my adrenal glands, and lab tests show my cortisol levels are low in the morning and midday. I have been advised by my doctor to obtain licorice root extract. After reading The Hormone Cure by Sarah, I noted that she recommends 600 milligrams of licorice root extract standardized to 25% glycyrrhizic acid. Is it possible for me to obtain this from you? I am having trouble finding a source for whole licorice root without lots of other unwanted additives. I live in South Florida. Okay, Sandra, I want you to know that I do not sell any herbs of any kind. It's one of the primary reasons that I wanted to answer this question, because I want everyone to know that I personally consider it a breach of ethics for anyone who gives a person health advice to sell them remedies. Now, I certainly understand that I am the odd herbalist out on this, and that the vast majority of my peers, from naturopathic doctors to acupuncturists to herbalists to chiropractors, sell remedies. I still think it's unethical. I certainly would never want to go to a medical doctor who prescribed a drug for me only to learn that the doctor owned the drug company. Certainly, we can see very clearly there how there is a conflict of interest. The conflict of interest to me is even greater. If I am recommending that you get something and I am telling you that it has to be a very certain specific way and that I am the only person that can provide that to you, then to my mind, in my opinion, I am enslaving you. I am not giving you the power of your own health. I am not sharing herbal medicine as people's medicine with you. I am being someone who wants others to be beholden to me. I am being someone who does not want others to feel powerful and secure in their own health. And look at what the net result has been here. The net result of these people giving you a recommendation has been that you feel like you can't get what you want. So, let's turn this around. Forget the licorice completely. It's gone. Instead, we're going to focus in on nourishing herbal infusions. Nobody sells nourishing herbal infusions. You need to go and buy dried herb to make the nourishing herbal infusions, and you can buy that dried herb at a variety of different places, none of which I own or have any investment in. From your local health food store to bulk herb suppliers, and there are links to some of them at SusanWeed.com. They're listed in my books as well. And we're going to take 1 ounce of dried herb. We're going to put it into a quart jar. Fill that jar right up to the top with boiling water. Put a tight lid on it. And the herb that you're going to start with is nettle, stinging nettle, Urtica dioica. 1 ounce of dried stinging nettle in a quart jar, the jar filled to the top with the boiling water, a lid put on, and that's allowed to steep for at least 4 hours or overnight. I usually steep mine for 10 to 12 hours. Then that infusion, that liquid, is strained. The plant material is squeezed to get all the liquid out of it, and the liquid, the nourishing herbal infusion, is refrigerated. Stinging nettle completely rebuilds the adrenals and will help your cortisol come back up. In terms of the exposure to environmental radiation, I would suggest that you start making seaweed a regular part of your diet. Wakame, kombu, and Nereocystis kelp, 3 different kinds of kelp. Wakame, kombu, Nereocystis, any one of them, you don't need to get all 3, can be cooked with your grains, cooked with your beans, cooked with vegetables, prepared in a variety of ways. And seaweed removes from the body environmental radiation, and I suspect will allow you to be less sensitive to electromagnetic frequencies. Sandra, I hope that this has helped you. I'm glad that you're going to the Weston A. Price Foundation website. There's a lot of really good information there. And just forget the licorice root, okay? I think that's the easiest thing to do. Work with those nourishing herbal infusions, especially the nettle, but they're all really good for you. Oat straw, red clover, linden. Ooh, linden would be so wonderful and helpful for you. And I think linden is so tasty as well. Green blessings. All right. And a sip of my infusion. Oh, it's a hot day in the Catskills today. And even though it's gotten dark, it's still hot. I need to keep drinking to replace all that I'm using up as I'm talking to you. Susan, hello. I'm looking for a very effective, all-natural method of birth control. I read about charting my period and taking my temperature, but they don't sound effective. Do you know of any natural method of birth control that is really effective against pregnancy? I'm a 32-year-old woman living in Los Angeles and otherwise healthy. I guess that means otherwise than living in Los Angeles. I took the pill in the past, but I prefer something all natural. Also, do you know of any good naturopaths in Los Angeles? All right, are you ready, Clara? The best, absolutely 100% guaranteed, never failed natural method of birth control is lesbianism. You find yourself a really nice woman partner that you're really turned on to, and you hang out there till you hit menopause, and I guarantee you won't get pregnant. All right, maybe you're saying, oh, I should have been clearer in my question. I'm worried about birth control because I don't want to be a lesbian. But you might want to reconsider that. You know, it's not like with men. With men, men are really either born heterosexual or homosexual. They don't have much choice in the matter. They just kind of got to be what they got to be because they were created that way. But women really do have a choice in the matter, you know? We can fix our sexual attention and our devotion on just about anything, from a rock to a man, and all the nicer things in between those two things. So do give it some serious thought as to whether or not lesbianism might be the very best method of birth control for you. If not, then you might want to consider wild carrot seed. My past apprentice, good friend, and, praise for wonderful herbalist Robin Rose Bennett, is the wild carrot seed lady way back. When she was an apprentice, she got very interested in wild carrot seed, and she spent, well, I guess the past 20 years devoting herself to testing and working with wild carrot seed. In some of her tests, she has found it to be more effective than birth control pills. That's saying a lot now, isn't it? And the question I know that you have is, okay, well, how do I use it? I first came across the information on using wild carrot seed to prevent implantation in a book from India. And there, the women of Rajasthan province were taking a tablespoonful of wild carrot seeds, yes, it grows in India, for 3 to 7 days immediately following a possible fertilizing intercourse. Now, that taking your temperature and charting, you do want to do, because it's what helps you know whether or not it could have been a fertilizing intercourse. Obviously, the ideal with the charting and the temperature taking is that you don't have intercourse during times when there could be a possibility of fertilization. But even if you do decide to go ahead and have heterosexual intercourse at that time, if you have the wild carrot seed, you could take that somewhat as a morning after pill. Robin Rose Bennett has also been doing work with women who don't want to do it as a morning after. And again, I would suggest that you seek her out. Robin, like the bird, Rose, like the flower. Bennett, I always say two N's, two T's, and she says two E's as well. B-E-N-N-E-T-T. Robin Rose Bennett and Wild Carrot Seed. Now, speaking of India, there was a woman from India who was a midwife. And she said to me, oh, you know, in India, the major kind of birth control that we use is the box method. Now, she might have been pulling my leg. It's certainly possible. I looked at her and I said, the box method? She says, yes, you have relations with the man standing on a box, both standing up face to face. And you know, when he gets that look in his eyes, you kick the box. I think maybe she was putting me on there. It's certainly possible. I got to kind of keep your wits together there to kick that box at just the right moment, and we certainly wouldn't want him falling down and hurting himself, would we? As for a more modern way to kick the box and get his box in hot water, we know that hot water kills sperm. Even a laptop computer on his lap can kill those sperm. If you can entice him to spend 15 or 20 minutes in a hot tub or a hot bath, it's got to be at least 110 or over 15 minutes every night for 10 days, he's going to be shooting blanks for a month or more. The woman who told me this said that it would actually last for up to 3 months, but that you might want to just get back in the hot tub now and then to make sure that he continues to shoot those blanks. Now, I've actually saved the best to last. Would you be willing to take a birth control that could reduce your risk of ovarian cancer by 1,000% and reduce your risk of breast cancer by 500%? Well, that's birth control pills. As far as I'm concerned, birth control pills are one of the greatest gifts that modern science has given to modern women. And I am all for birth control pills. Some women say, well, don't you think they're unnatural? And I say, no, actually, menstruating every month is what's unnatural. Now, I'm certainly not suggesting that the woman I'm about to talk about would be someone that you would want to be. She's certainly not someone that I would want to be. But I'm talking about her. This is a real woman because she gives us an example of what natural and normal looks like. And this woman, who's still living, so I'm not going to use her name, was married at 14. And before she ever had a menstrual period, she became pregnant. In fact, she has not had a single menstrual period for her entire life, and she's now in her late 60s. Throughout her life, between puberty and menopause, she was either pregnant or lactating. And so she had no menses at all. She did ovulate. I think she had 10 or 11 children. And so she certainly did ovulate that many times, perhaps even as many as a dozen times. But think about that. Women nowadays may ovulate 12 times a year for every year of their fertile life. Our bodies are not set up to handle that. That is incredibly damaging to our bodies to ovulate and menstruate. I know, this sounds strange, doesn't it? But it is, because it's not what the system is set up for. When we ovulate, there's not an opening in the ovary. The egg has to bust out of the ovary. It literally breaks a hole in the ovary to get out. When we ovulate, if we have never been pregnant, our body doesn't know whether we're pregnant or not. So it busily goes around making our breasts bigger, causing us to gain weight, changing our hormones, all for naught. Then we have to get rid of that extra weight, get rid of that bloat, get rid of the extra tissue that has been made in the breast, get rid of all those extra hormones, and that itself is another big deal for the body to do. So menstruating month after month after month simply isn't healthy for women. And when we take birth control pills, of course, we don't actually menstruate. If you take pills in which you follow the pattern of pills for 3 weeks and then no pills for 1 week, you will have a breakthrough bleed. But that's not a menstruation. You have not ovulated, you haven't created the hormones of menstruation. And so it really doesn't count in terms of ovarian cancer risk and breast cancer risk. The newer pills, which allow women to take a pill every single day for periods of up to a year, is more natural. Most women who are pregnant for 40 weeks, and then if that woman breastfeeds for 3 months, which is kind of a minimum amount of time, she will not have menstruated for a full year. This is natural and normal for women. What we're doing by menstruating monthly is not natural, is not normal, and gives rise to health problems. I would not, under any circumstances, suggest that you have your tubes tied or that you use a hormone implant in your arm. However, I do know quite a few women now who have an IUD, some with hormone, slow-release hormone on it, and some without. And most of these women are quite happy with their IUD and find it a natural, completely effective form of birth control. Again, we understand that birth control itself is not natural. So it's rather a contradiction in terms to say that we're looking for a natural way to do something unnatural. I hope this has helped, Clara, and I never refer anyone at all. And even if I did know of any good naturopaths in Los Angeles, I would not suggest any of them to you. Green blessings. Okay, getting down here to the last part of our show. And we've got, good. We're starting to get into some that have actually come in pretty recently. These came in at the beginning of July here. So I hope you're listening in. Mabel wants to know, how do you feel about green smoothies versus herbal infusions? Well, Mabel, let me put it very, very simply. How do I feel about you drinking something that could kill you versus drinking something that will make you healthy? Hey, it's not even a question, is it? No way would I ever drink a green smoothie. No way would I ever suggest that anybody drink a green smoothie. And no way would I ever urge you, suggest you, or support you in drinking a green smoothie. Why not? Let's start here. There is no nutrition of any kind available from any raw food, especially not blended up like that. Okay. It's true. If you don't believe me, go watch the raw versus cooked debate on YouTube and get a sense of how there's no way that putting anything in a blender is going to break any cell wall. Cells are small. About a million cells in a plant would fit into a printed period. Those blender blades are big. So trying to break any of those cell walls is kind of like putting you in a room with a sword and a bunch of marbles and telling you to cut those marbles in half. It's just not going to happen, is it? So you can drop all the greens you want in your blender, and you can whir them up, and you can make something that looks green, but you haven't broken any cell walls, you haven't gotten any vitamins, and you haven't gotten any minerals, and you haven't gotten anything at all from that plant. So why even bother doing it? And I'm wrong. You could get something from the plant. You could get bacterial food poisoning. You could get viral food poisoning. You could get parasites. You could get all kinds of nasty stuff from raw greens. There's a reason why humans throughout most of the world don't eat raw greens. And it's not just because we can't get any nourishment from them. It's also because they carry things that can be lethal to us. Bad enough if we just eat those raw greens and get those foodborne bacteria, those foodborne viruses, or those foodborne parasites. Worse yet, if we throw it into a blender. As even though the blender doesn't break the cell wall, it thoroughly mixes the bacterial contamination, the viral contamination, or the parasitical contamination, which might be in one little small place of that plant. Now it mixes it thoroughly into the whole thing, and those viruses, bacteria, and parasites begin to reproduce. Within 1 minute of making a green smoothie, you can have 10,000 times more pathogens than you did when you started. So what's the point here? We're not getting any nutritional value, and we're making a drink that could be lethal? Do you think I'm overstating the case? Do you remember back some years ago, over 10 years ago now, when there was E. coli contamination of spinach? The very first person to die of this was a young boy whose mom made him a green smoothie with that spinach. Many people who ate that spinach cooked didn't suffer so much as an upset stomach. This young man, because he had it as a green smoothie, is now dead. Nourishing herbal infusions are made with dried plants. And there's very few contaminants that are really actually able to survive that drying process. Once the plant dries up and has been in storage, contaminants are far less active if they're there at all. We then, to make a nourishing herbal infusion, take our weighed out dried herb, put it in a jar, and pour boiling water over it. Ha! Take that, contaminants. Dead, die. All right, pour those boiling water over that bacteria. It kills them. Pour that boiling water over those parasites. It kills them. Pour that boiling water over those viruses. It kills them. If there's anything at all left in that dried herb, it's dead because we have poured boiling water over it. Wow. What do I think about the difference between green smoothies and nourishing herbal infusions? I think one is the worst possible thing that you could drink, and I'd probably get thirsty rather than to drink a green smoothie. And the other is just about the only thing that I drink. Thanks for asking, Mabel, because I really enjoyed answering your questions. Okay, we have another question here. Hang on 1 second. Hello, Ms. Weed. This is just a quick question about milk thistle. You write that milk thistle should be tinctured in 100 proof alcohol for it to be effective. Does this mean if one grinds the milk thistle seeds to an edible powder and eats a cup or more during the day, it will not be effective to help the liver? The only milk thistle tinctured in 100 proof alcohol. Are you saying that only milk thistle tinctured in 100 proof alcohol can be effective as opposed to eating milk thistle in its natural state? Hypothetically, if one does not feel right about putting a tinctured alcohol through the liver, does this mean there is no other way to effectively use milk thistle for helping the liver except by using alcohol? Thank you very much for your time and your response. It is greatly appreciated. Alan. All right, there's a variety of things that need to be treated and understood here, and we'll just kind of go through them and line them up one by one. First of all, a healthy liver can process 1 ounce of alcohol per hour. A liver that is not so healthy, nonetheless, processes alcohol. Alcohol in and of itself does not damage the liver. It's not that alcohol is damaging to the liver, it's that too much alcohol taken too quickly can be damaging to the liver. It depends on what alcohol we're talking about. How much is too much for the liver? Let me tell you a true story. One of my correspondence course students told me that she was very concerned about her mother, who was an alcoholic. And I asked her how old her mother was, and she said that her mother was 87. And I said, well, my goodness, did Mom just start being an alcoholic? This is a pretty old age to get to, being an alcoholic. Most alcoholics start drinking in their early teenage years. And she said, no, my mom is an alcoholic just like that. She started drinking to the point of getting drunk when she was 14. I said, are you putting me on? Your mom has been getting drunk, is an alcoholic, drunk alcoholic, for, what are we talking here, 70 years, over 70 years. How's her liver? And my student said, the doctor says her liver is in great shape because she's only ever drunk vodka. Now, I found this out in a different way when I went away to college. I do not enjoy alcohol. It doesn't make me feel good. I see that for some people, it seems to relax something. It doesn't relax anything for me. It makes me feel like I've been run over by a truck. And then the next day, it makes me feel like I've been run over by a train. It's just no fun. I see other people apparently having fun with alcohol, but it has never been fun for me. Well, you can imagine how horrible this was at college. Because, unfortunately, most of the social scene at college then, as now, revolves around drinking. And I don't like alcohol, and I don't like to get drunk, and I don't even like to have anything to drink, not even so much as a glass of wine. It doesn't make me feel good. So, gosh, what was I going to do? Have no social life, become a bookworm, drink, and feel bad? Golly, golly, golly. So I started asking around, and I found that I could have a glass of tomato juice with some vodka in it, or a glass of orange juice with some vodka in it, and it would be a big glass full of stuff, and I could look like I was drinking, and I only had to have little sips of it, and I could have just that one drink, and it could be with me all night long, and that people would accept me socially. And best of all, I found it didn't make me feel bad. It didn't make me feel good, but it didn't make me feel bad. So I found out for myself at the age of 16 that vodka seems to have little or no effect on the liver. Okay, that's item number two. Item number one, alcohol is not necessarily bad for the liver. Item number two, vodka itself is definitely not bad for the liver, and not necessarily good for the liver, but not bad for the liver. Item number three, how much are we talking about here? A 1 ounce bottle of tincture contains 40 dropperfuls. That's 40 dropperfuls. The usual dose of milk thistle seed tincture is a dropperful, or 1/40th of an ounce. 1/40th of the amount that a healthy liver can process in 1 hour. Even if you were to take 3 dropperfuls of milk thistle seed tincture morning, noon, and night, you would have only 3/40ths of an ounce, 3/40ths of the amount that a liver can process in an hour in 24 hours. So truly, you're blowing something completely out of proportion when you say you don't feel right about putting a tinctured alcohol through the liver. Tinctures are fine for the liver. We are not suggesting a cup of tincture here, and I am appalled that you're eating a cup of milk thistle seeds. Appalled, right? Basically, you're having to eat a cup because it's not effective, because it's not doing anything for you. A cup, that is an outrageous amount of milk thistle seed. I would make 32 ounces of tincture from 1 cup of milk thistle seed. I would buy 1 cup of milk thistle seed. I would not grind it. I would put it in a quart jar. I would fill that jar to the top with 100 proof vodka. I would put a lid on it, and I would let that sit for 6 weeks, and then I would use that. And yes, that is going to be far, far, far more effective than grinding it up and eating a cup or more during the day. My goodness. Now, here we come to Susan's constant complaint. You're not here, so I can't ask you, why on earth are you taking milk thistle in the first place? What's going on with your liver? You don't tell me what is going on with your liver. So I feel kind of frustrated that I don't know how or what you want to help the liver for. If you listen to this whole show, you will hear me earlier on in the show talking to a woman about hot liver and cold liver, and the hot liver herb and the cold liver herb, and how we want to use the hot liver herb dandelion for cold livers, and we want to use the cold liver herb chicory for hot livers. But I don't know what's going on with your liver here, if it's overheating or if it's overcooling, or if there really is indeed anything the matter with your liver. Do you have hepatitis? Are you an alcoholic? Why do you think there's something the matter with your liver? Let me tell you about a really interesting study that told me a lot about milk thistle. I don't know if it will tell you about milk thistle too, but it certainly tells me a lot about milk thistle. There's a mushroom. Actually, that mushroom is up right now in my woods, and it's called Amanita verna, the destroying angel. It is a beautiful mushroom, pure white. It arises from a slightly bulbous base up in a long and slender stalk with a tight cap clasping around the stalk. As it matures, the cap swings up and away, leaving behind its veil hanging around the stalk like a beautiful veil from a bride. And the cap, the gills are white, the cap is white, the stalk is white, the veil is white, the base is white. The cap extends and spores begin to spread. And there are reported cases of someone touching this mushroom and winding up in the hospital. People who have actually eaten it, so far as we know, are all dead. There are no survivors on this mushroom. It totally and completely destroys the liver. Now, scientists were curious to see if there was anything that could indeed protect the liver against Amanita verna, the destroying angel. And so they took a group of lab mice, and they fed this mushroom to the lab mice, and then they gave them milk thistle seed. They all died. And then they took another group of mice, and they gave them Amanita verna, destroying angel mushroom, and milk thistle seed at the same time. Some of those mice lived. Then they took a third group of mice and they gave them milk thistle seed, and then they gave them the destroying angel mushroom. And a lot of mice lived. What does this tell us? I think it tells us very, very clearly that milk thistle seed is hepatoprotective, that it protects the liver. And so I do suggest if someone is going to go out drinking, take some milk thistle seed tincture before you go out drinking, or if you're going to be visiting a chemical factory, take some milk thistle seed tincture before you go there. Or if you're going to be exposed to some horrible kind of fumes, take some milk thistle seed tincture first. Like if you work in a plastics factory or a refinery, right? Any place where there are going to be fumes that could affect your liver, take some milk thistle seed tincture first thing in the morning before you go to work. But to take milk thistle seed tincture to heal your liver, I don't personally think it works that way. I'm not saying it couldn't. Belief certainly can trump active ingredients. But I would say, listen to this whole blog talk tonight, the whole 2 hours, and find that other section where I'm talking to the other woman about overheating and overcooling, or write in again and tell me what your actual problem is, and let's see if we can find some herbs that would be more effective for you than milk thistle. So the short answer to your question, Alan, in Humboldt County is yes. I am saying that eating ground up milk thistle is not going to do much of anything for you, and that taking milk thistle seed tincture is definitely the best way to go, great before chemotherapy, and that the amount of alcohol is inconsequential to the liver. And so far as you make that tincture from vodka, will have no effect, in fact, of any kind on your liver. Green blessings, and thanks for asking. And here's another question that's come in pretty recently. I'm going to put this down. Maybe we'll get to it tonight. I'm tired of being called Susan. Write me as Susan. Sun. Now, you see, I get gnarly and I put your question to the bottom of the stack. It's Sue Sun Gang. Here's one from Sun to Sue Sun. I have been experiencing ringing in my ear for 8 months. It has only gone away once or twice while I was on a cruise. It seems to get louder when I am fatigued, and it is only in one ear. Is there anything I can do to rid myself of this ringing? Well, Sunbeam, you have a difficult problem. At this point, the scientific tradition says that you are joined by millions of other Americans with tinnitus, with ringing in the ears, and they do not have the slightest idea of what causes it or anything that could make it go away either. In fact, the most scientific opinion is that we all have ringing in our ears, but some of us hear it and others of us don't, and that it is, in fact, the natural, normal sounds of your natural, normal body. Because there are no physical reasons for this to happen. It's not like, oh, somebody got a concussion and now their ears ring. No, it just seems to kind of suddenly be there or suddenly not be there. As you say, you went on a cruise and suddenly it wasn't there, which leads us to think, oh, it's not a physiological thing, but it's not necessarily a psychological thing either, but perhaps a acute sensitivity to something that is going on in your body. So here's a variety of things that may or may not help you. First of all, you may wish to try putting some oil in your ear. Good time of the year to harvest mullein flowers. Fill a jar with mullein flowers and pour pure olive oil over those mullein flowers. Make sure the jar is completely filled with flowers and make sure that the jar is completely filled with your pure olive oil and that the jar was completely dry when you put these things in it and that your mullein flowers are totally dry when you put them in the jar. I prefer to harvest my mullein flowers sometime between 1 o'clock and 3 or 4 o'clock on a hot, sunny July afternoon when there hasn't been rain for a day or two. Let that mullein flower oil sit for 6 weeks, and then you have a classic ear oil, which is used everywhere that mullein grows to help people with all kinds of ear problems, from simple ear infections to tinnitus, ringing in the ears. Does it have a strong track record of eliminating it? No. Does it have a strong track record of eliminating bacterial infections in the ear? Yes. So if for some reason there is actually a physical cause to your ear ringing and that has to do with some infection, then mullein oil will get rid of it. And if it doesn't, there's a faint possibility that the mullein oil will just change what's going on in your ear enough that the ringing will go away and will no longer be something that you are noticing or hearing. Here's another possible suggestion. If you have a meditation practice, you can do this during your meditation practice. And if you don't, then find a time to sit by yourself where you won't be interrupted. Don't take your cell phone with you. Leave your cell phone out of the room. Close the door. Do not take your computer with you. Do not have the television on. Go for a walk in the woods. Get away from it all. And then sit quietly and breathe. And as you sit quietly and breathe, I would like you to imagine or to pretend or to visualize a guardian or a guide. And this guardian or this guide can take any form at all. It can be a human form, an animal form, a plant form. It can be a shape. It can be an insect. It can be a bird. It can be a fish. Anything that you see, sense, or know is there as your guardian or your guide. And then I would ask you to ask your guardian or your guide to go with you into your body. And you can do any tasks that you want, any exploration that you want in your body. But I would give you a couple of suggestions. First of all, go into your body and into your ears and say, is there something that I can change here from the inside that will get rid of this ringing? And see if there's a switch you can pull. See if there's a curtain you can draw. See how that ringing in your ears looks to you and your guide from the inside, and what you could possibly do, what action you could possibly take that would allow you to change what is going on right now with your ears. The other thing that you could do is you could ask your guardian, your guide, to take you to the guardian guide of your physical body. The wise healer within is my name for this entity. The wise healer within that knows everything that's going on in my body and can alert me to anything that's going on in my body, and often says that I am too busy to pay attention, and so has to give me some problem to make me stop and pay attention. And this kind of thing, tinnitus, this ringing in the ears, often seems to me to be a way that the wise healer within tries to get our attention, to say there's something else going on, but I can't seem to get you to notice this other thing that's going on. So I'm going to set up a ringing in your ears, hoping that will make you stop long enough to pay attention to me and to the message that I have for you about your body. Especially because you say it gets louder when you're fatigued. So again, this sounds to me like the wise healer within doing her best to say, listen up, listen up, listen up. You are so busy, and when you get tired, I'm going to be ringing louder, louder, louder until you get what I need to tell you. It doesn't necessarily have to be that you have some terrible thing going on. It could actually be a pleasant message as well. Something wonderful is going to happen to you. We don't have to dread the messages that we get from the wise healer within. They can be a variety of different things. So if you have the opportunity, if you have the inclination, a meditation could be very helpful for you in learning what is going on with this. And then one last suggestion for you, Sunbeam. And I would refer you to my book, Breast Cancer? Breast Health! If you would like to read more about what I'm going to propose here. And the section in my breast book is called The Wise Woman Never Asks Why. And it is a several-part exercise that you do. You'll need a writing instrument and some paper. And the first thing that I would ask you to do is to write down the problem with the problem. And I would like you to write down at least three problems with your problem. I'm going to make some up here, and I'm certainly not saying that they're yours, but just to have something that we can go on. This ringing in my ears makes me want to cry. This ringing in my ears keeps me from enjoying music. This ringing in my ears makes me want to stay home. So we write down the problem with the problem, at least three of those. And if there's more, well, certainly write down more. And then we want to revise those statements. We want to revise those statements because by nature of how I have asked the question, those statements will always be in the voice of the victim. The problem with the problem is going to be the victim's voice whining and telling us what's the matter and why the victim is unhappy and feeling victimized. So we want to write from the voice of power. And, of course, most people usually think if it says, well, this ringing in my ears makes me want to cry, then most people think the voice of power would be something like, I'm going to get rid of this ringing in my ears so I can laugh. Oh, no, 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 no. And we are more devious than that. We are more devious than that with ourselves. And so the voice of power is the voice that wants these things. Instead of saying the problem with the problem is that it makes me want to cry, we are going to rewrite this statement so that it says, I want to cry. I don't want to enjoy music. I want to stay home alone. Now, the more that these second statements make you shiver and cringe and say, oh no, oh no, oh no, the truer they are. Because these are aspects of our shadow self. This is the self, this is the aspects of ourselves that we don't like to see, that we throw in the dungeon, that we say are unworthy, that we refuse to bring to the dinner table, that we refuse to let in to the group. And these aspects of ourself are actually fairly weak. But when they are relegated to the dungeon, they gain strength in numbers and run our lives. By letting them back in, by letting in the one who wants to cry, by letting in the one who doesn't want to enjoy the music, by letting in the one who wants to be home alone, and finding out if there's another way for her to get her needs met without it being ringing in your ears, which is the third part, right? So the first part is the problem with the problem. The second part is rewrite in the voice of power, I want these things. And the third part of this is, how can I get these things without having the problem? Rather an interesting concept, isn't it? In the wise woman tradition, we nourish the wholeness of the unique individual. And wholeness is not just about sunshine and bluebirds. Wholeness is also about the moon and the darkness. It's about the deepness of winter. It's about ice. Wholeness is about grief and about anger, as well as about love and orgasm. In our quest for wholeness, it is rare that we need to be encouraged to seek out the light. It is the dark that we need to be encouraged to seek out, because it is the deep and nourishing dark, the deep and holy dark, the deep dark that gives birth to all things, the dark that was the original void. By turning the tables on our problems, by in looking at our problems as voices of parts of ourselves that we have thrown away, we can reintegrate those parts, we can become more whole, and we can often find a new way to get what we need and want without having the particular problem that is driving us nuts. So, I'm sorry that I couldn't say, oh yes, Herbalists of America have a wonderful herb that can get rid of ringing in the ears. As a matter of fact, the Herbalists of America would be rich, rich, rich if we had such an herb. Because, as I said, this is a pretty big and growing problem, and we don't really have a clue. So, hopefully those meditations will give you a clue, or you can even use that exercise that I gave you. Now, my countdown clock tells me that I have just 1 minute left here on our Blog Talk Radio show for this evening, July 16th. I wish to thank you for joining me in reweaving the healing cloak of the ancients and returning herbal medicine to its rightful place as people's medicine. If you'd like more, please come and visit me at my website. That's www.susanweed.com. Or check out my Wise Woman Bookshop, where you will find all of the books that I've been mentioning tonight, my green book, where I talk about the herbs, breast cancer breast health exclamation point, which has this exercise I just mentioned in it, new menopausal years, the wise woman way, alternative approaches for women 30 to 90, and down there, pelvic health handbook for everybody, the wise woman way. You'll also find information about my classes, my correspondence courses, and all other kinds of things. Green blessings, everyone. Until next week, with Susan Weed, right here at Blog Talk Radio.